Welcome to Whiskey Cask, Cask Strength Conversation, featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 420 for April 14th, 2013. Coming up in a few minutes.
They flew me up on a really wild November day. The wind was blowing. We could hardly stand up straight when we got out of the car. I was sort of hooked from that moment. And when you walk in through the gates at Highland Park and you see that wonderful listed building, you think, yeah, this is a super place to be.
I'm back home after a short trip this week to visit Graham Manson and the rest of the folks at Highland Park Distillery on Orkney. We'll hear more from Graham later on Whiskey Cast in Depth, along with some memories from one of Highland Park's retired workers. I'll also have the calendar of events, your voice, and the What I'm Tasting This Week department, all on this week's episode of Whiskey Cast.
Whiskey Cast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Let's start off with the week's news. It's brought to you by Glenmorangie. There's been a split in the U.S. craft distilling community, as many of the top craft distillers have split from the American Distilling Institute to form their own organization. The move came at this week's ADI conference in Denver. ADI had been the leading group for craft distillers, but there had also been growing discontent among some of the members. Penn Jensen left ADI to become the executive director of the new association.
ACDA, the American Craft Distillers Association mission, simply put, is to promote and protect craft distillers. And ADI has a much broader mission, mainly to introduce prospective distillers to the fundamental of getting started. That said, there is no negative split. It's a natural evolution. On one hand, ADI is a for-profit LLC, and ACDA is a 501c6 trade organization created of, by, and for licensed craft distillers. It's more like graduate school, an environment of peers focused on building brands and securing favorable taxation and permitting policies.
And that had been a source of disagreement, I understand, between some of the craft distillers and the current ADI leadership led by Bill Owens about the way things were going, essentially, right?
Well, it has to do with representation as much as anything, which isn't to say to denigrate Bill or any of the people at ADI anyway. But the board, the evolution of these distillers is such, I mean, 5 years ago, you could hardly imagine the kind of growth that we've seen. And the brand building, the need for, you know, really a focused legislative approach, a focus on distribution, marketing, those things have really evolved. And ADI fundamentally does not represent all of the craft distillers. It's fundamentally run by Bill. There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's a perfectly reasonable thing to do. It's just that the craft distillers on their own said, you know, we really need our own trade organization, something that is run with a board of directors that has a focus and has reliable information that is vetted by the craft distillers so that they're not just speaking, one man, you know, making choices and decisions on his own, but really much more of a collective voice for craft distillers.
And you picked some of the top craft distillers to initially serve on the board, right?
Well, Mark, we've been working with ADI for 4 years trying to find a way to get the to get a nonprofit C6 to coordinate itself with ADI. And, you know, we just never found that magic formula. So it was essentially the same group that's been working on this for 4 years said, well, you know, guys, let's just get going. And now we've added a few people to that board, and we will be holding some elections up here shortly.
Now, what's the basic goal going to be going forward now? Are you going to try to be more of a lobbying organization and work with the state legislatures and work with Washington? Are you going to coordinate with Discus, essentially? Or how's this going to work?
We have no desire to compete with Discus. We're not a lobbying group, per se. As a C6, we have the ability to legally lobby congressmen and whatnot. But our goal is to work with Discus on federal and state and regional issues. For example, HB 1296-93 in Indiana, OHB 324 in Florida with St. Augustine Distilling, getting these regional permitting issues in front of legislators with constituents from those states really helps promote the bills that are valuable to the distillers. So we'll be working with Discus. We really like working with Discus. There is the caucus that craft distillers can own. It gives them a front row seat as to what's going on with the lobbying efforts. But I think as a trade organization, we bring more clout to the table as a group of constituents, particularly with regard to the distilling guilds around the country that are cropping up. And they're good. I mean, it's really good stuff that focuses the state's governments and regulatory systems on craft distilling in a really good way.
Are you going to link up internationally with the groups like the Craft Distillers Alliance that's popped up in the UK?
We will probably do that. There are no immediate plans to do it. We're just really getting this thing off the ground here. Our first goal is to take care of our business at home and then, of course, work with the appropriate people anywhere in the world.
Rory Donovan of Peach Street Distillers in Colorado is the ACDA's interim president. Ted Huber of Huber's Starlight Distillery in Indiana is the interim vice president. And Rogue's Brent Joyce is the secretary treasurer. Board members for the breakaway group include Chip Tate of Balcones, Tuttletown's Ralph Lorenzo, Rick Wassmond of Copper Fox, and Corsair's Andrew Weber. Another split to report, this one in Scotland, and this is also a bit of rumor control as well. There's been a lot of chatter in recent weeks about the Lang brothers splitting up the assets of Douglas Lang & Company. While an official announcement is still a couple of weeks away, Fred Lang has indicated on Facebook that he and his brother Stuart are parting ways. Stuart will be leaving the family-owned business founded by their father in 1948 to open his own company. You'll find Fred's entire statement in the news section of the WhiskeyCast website, and I'll have more details as they're available. A quick update on some new whiskeys now. The Balvenie has released three new expressions for the travel retail market. The Balvenie Triple Cask comes in 12, 16, and 25-year-old expressions. All three were matured in a combination of Oloroso sherry casks, first fill ex-bourbon barrels, and what the Balvenie refers to as traditional whiskey casks. Meanwhile, the Glenlivet has a variation on its classic 18-year-old expression out. The Glenlivet 18 Batch Reserve is available exclusively at the World Duty Free shops in the major UK airports. You'll find my tasting notes for a couple of the Balvenies and the Glenlivet at the WhiskeyCast website. I've been doing a lot of traveling lately, and if you're like me, you're always looking for good whiskey bars when you're on the road. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society has expanded into India for the first time, and I ran into Georgie Bell from the Society this week in Edinburgh. She was on hand to open up the first three venues in India.
They completely echo what we have. They are luxury, they are extravagant, incredible venues. So we've launched through the JW Marriott in Mumbai, the JW Marriott in Pune, and Restaurant Indigo in Mumbai, and we had three lovely, lavish events, three launch parties, food matched to the whiskey. We've got a 16-strong list that we've launched with our outturn, and we did various trainings, bar trainings, ambassador trainings, and press and media around that. So it was, I couldn't have wished for anything more successful.
And this is also actually open to people who are visiting Mumbai, who are society members who are coming into India as well, right?
Yeah, so when you join the society, you become a global member. you don't just join within your branch. You are open to every other branch around the world. And so society members in the UK, in the US, in Canada, in Australia, whenever they go to Mumbai and to Pune, to India, they know that they can get that dram that they've been waiting for at these three venues. And they get a discount as well as a member.
You'll find a link for the Society's Indian chapter at the WhiskeyCast website. By the way, the latest WhiskeyCast HD episode features my visit last month to India's Amrit Distillery in Bangalore. It's also available at WhiskeyCast.com. If you don't want to go all the way to India, Chicago may be a much closer option. There's a whole week of whiskey events in Chicago leading up to Whiskey Fest on the 26th, including the Binney's World of Whiskies Festival the night before. Brett Pontoni of Binney's gives us a preview.
World of Whiskies is a nice informal way to get together, meet some of your favorite master distillers, master blenders. You get to meet John and Amy from Whiskey Advocate magazine. They get a chance to pop in and relax a little bit before the big show on Friday. And it's turned into a great event. Last year we had a few hundred people. This year we're expecting that, as well as somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 different whiskies.
And this really sort of is the next to grand finale of what can be called Whiskey Week in Chicago, right?
It is pretty much the grand finale before the big show on Friday night.
And tell me about Whiskey Week in Chicago, because a lot of the good whiskey bars are holding events and everything leading up to your event, followed by the Whiskey Fest on Friday night.
Well, you know, it's an idea we kind of came up with and started really pushing 8 or 9 years ago. The Whiskey Fest, we realized about 8 or 9 years ago that all these wonderful master distillers, this great base of knowledge of whiskey production and whiskey marketing, were available for people to talk to for that whole week in the city of Chicago. So myself, working with Binney's and a number of different bar owners, including and really driven by Mike Miller from Delilah's, decided that it would be a good idea for us to start putting together our own shows. And if these guys are going to be in town for a few days, we'll give them a reason to get out and meet some consumers and talk about what they make. And now Fountainhead has been is a wonderful whiskey bar. They've been a huge part of it, and this is just getting bigger and bigger as we go.
Especially when Whiskey Fest is capacity controlled, essentially. They can only sell so many tickets, but this gives people in the greater Chicago area a chance to go out and meet these guys without having to try to fight for the Whiskey Fest tickets that are available, right?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. If you're in Chicago, even if you travel in a few days early between the tastings that go on at all the great bars and restaurants, the tasting that we host on Thursday night before, after events Friday evening, and even events going in Saturday afternoon, Saturday, you have ample opportunity to meet all these guys and have a chat and compliment them and ask them questions.
By the way, Binney's won Whiskey Magazine's Icons of Whiskey Award as the world's best multiple outlet whiskey retailer last month. Ardbeg's Galileo took top honors for single malt whiskeys in the World Whiskies Awards, but this year Ardbeg will be getting down and dirty instead of going into orbit. Ardbeg distillery manager Mickey Heads was at Whiskey Live New York last week, and I got him to give us a preview of what's in store for Ardbeg Day during Islay's Feagiel on June 1st.
We've got another big day, 1st of June, this year's Ardbeg Day. Big day last year for a lot of the embassies, different countries holding different fun events. Hopefully we'll have something the same this year, you know, so we'll have something out for that day as well. So I'm sure people will be looking forward to see what we've got this year. So it's going to be an exciting year, another big year.
So what is Ardbog?
Ardbog, oh well, Ardbog's just something for this year. We're looking to try and, you know, We do crazy things and so good fun days, and it's all about it. And we're looking to think. We've got our new release coming out on 1st of June, and it's going to be called Ardbog. You know, so Ardbog's Ardbog Day for us. So it's our new limited release coming out in June. We're going to have some fun days with it again this year, and I think people are going to like it a lot. Yeah.
And is that also going to be part of the Feige special bottling, or the first series of that, or how's that going to work?
It'll come out, usually released on the 1st of June. That's the day we have it in our day at the distillery. And, you know, people coming to the Feige and Islay will get a chance to get that on that day. And also with our embassies, it'll be available for people across the globe as well. So should be good fun days. Yeah.
Now, I know you got to brag on Jackie winning Visitor Center Manager of the Year in the recent Icons of Whiskey Awards.
Yeah, Jackie did really well. She's good for it. She did really good at her job, and she's had it's good to get her rewarded like that and all her efforts and good fun. She's really good at what she does. And we also got the best single malt whiskey in the world for Galileo. as well with Whiskey Magazine. So that's a real bonus for us as well. So we've had a really good year all round. So we're looking forward to it, and hopefully we can keep it going and win some more.
By the way, we're still waiting for word on what the other distilleries on Isla are planning for their festival bottlings. Finally, congratulations once again to our good friend Davin DeKergamo. His book, Canadian Whiskey, The Portable Expert, was named the best book of the year on beer, wine, or spirits by the International Association of Culinary Professionals this week. It's the second major award in the last few weeks for Davin. He was a finalist in this year's Gourmand World Cookbook Awards. You can keep up with the latest whiskey news all week long at whiskeycast.com. But for now, that's the week's news.
The news is brought to you by Glenmorangie. Help us select the next Glenmorangie single malt whiskey with the Glenmorangie Caskmasters project. Sign up online through the Glenmorangie Facebook page or on glenmorangie.com.
The latest episode of WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings is online now. Our tasting panel gathered at Whiskey Live New York to taste a wide range of whiskeys. You can hear the entire conversation at the WhiskeyCast website or on iTunes. Your voice is brought to you this time around by Johnny Walker. Lots of comments on this week's visit to Orkney and Highland Park, but one note on the Facebook page from Joe Hyman stood out. He wrote, "Other than distilling at Scapa and Highland Park, does anything happen in Orkney?" Yes, Joe, turns out Orkney's actually a pretty busy place. As you might expect, there's a lot of fishing and farming, but Orkney is also a key part of the Scottish energy industry. A lot of the oil from the North Sea offshore wells passes through Orkney on its way to markets around the world, and there's also a lot of work on the wind energy front going on in Orkney as well. It was snowing when we got to the distillery on Monday, and I posted a photo on the Facebook page of the pagoda with the gray smoke coming out through the snow. Of course, a couple of wise guys immediately wondered whether somebody had elected a new pope or a distillery manager. Nope. Graham Manson is still the manager. We'll hear from him in a few minutes, but well played, guys. Well played. If you have something you'd like to share, you can always post it on the Your Voice page at WhiskeyCast.com or on our Facebook page, or you can email me. The address is comments@WhiskeyCast.com, and this week's Your Voice segment is brought to you by Johnny Walker on the web at JohnnyWalker.com. Let's check the calendar of events now, brought to you, as always, by Laphroaig. The Brandy Library in New York City will hold a spirit school class on bourbons this Wednesday night, the 17th. The Scotch Malt Whiskey Society's UK chapter will hold an American oak and bourbon tasting on the 18th at the Vaults in Leith, Scotland. Meanwhile, the U.S. chapter has single malt extravaganzas planned in Dallas on the 18th and Houston the 25th. Down One Bourbon Bar in Louisville will host Wild Turkey's Jimmy Russell for a Master Distillers Dinner on the 18th as well. The inaugural Whiskey Obsession Festival will be on the 19th in Sarasota, Florida. Whiskey Live Tokyo is coming up on the 20th and 21st. And the Kentucky Bourbon Festival's annual Spring Sampler will be on the 27th in Bardstown. The Edinburgh Whiskey Fest will be that same day at the Hub in Castle Hill, and the annual Limburg Whiskey Fair will run the 27th through the 29th in Limburg, Germany. You'll find more than 200 whiskey events around the world on the calendar at WhiskeyCast.com, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Take a virtual distillery tour at Laphroaig.com, and while you're there, become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla.
WhiskeyCast, brought to you by Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. In conversation with Liam O'Leary, distiller, Redbreast single pot still Irish whiskey.
My wife, she has a cousin, a priest, up in Ballyfermot in Dublin. And he comes down every year, especially if Cocker in the All-Ireland final, you know. He makes it his business every year to come down for, by the way, to watch the match, but I know he comes down because he gets a couple of bottles of Redbreast off me every year, you know, and we have a few Redbreasts, and we'd hopefully Cork will be in the All-Ireland final like they were last year, and he's talking about coming again this year anyway, because I think the priests like their Redbreast anyway, nice and smooth, and you know, not too harsh. It's a lovely smooth whiskey.
Redbreast, the definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Those in the know Redbreast.
Whiskey Cast In Depth is brought to you by Woodford Reserve. A half mile really isn't that long, but it's the difference between being Scotland's northernmost distillery and not being Scotland's northernmost distillery. Highland Park has held that distinction since 1798, when Magnus Jonsson set up his illegal still in the hills outside Kirkwall. Of course, the stills are legal now, have been for almost 200 years, and Graham Manson is the distillery manager today. He arrived in Orkney last year to take over for Russell Anderson, who moved south to become manager at the McAllen. Graham and I sat down for a chat the other night before dinner at Balfour Castle.
The uniqueness comes from maybe a couple or three themes. The Orkney environment, and particularly the Orkney peat that we use to make the kiln malt, is for sure unique. There's been some chemical analysis done of that peat in terms of its physical properties. And when we kiln that, it imparts a really different phenolic flavour to the malt. So that's certainly one of the unique features. The hand-turned malt that you saw today in the germinating floors, there's only about half a dozen distilleries doing that still. So again, that's something unique for us. And you're in company of Stuart McPherson, our Master of Wood. So the sherry casks that we purchase, the treatments that we put them through, again, you don't find many distillers who do that level of treatment. So those are some of the unique factors. The Orkney climate as well, very cool, ideal for maturation of whiskey. Not a lot of fluctuations in temperature.
Now, you've only been up here about a year or so. Tell me what it's like following in the footsteps of Russell Anderson and his predecessors in a long line of distillers going all the way back to Magnus Jonsson back in 1798.
Yeah, the original distillery manager, Magnus. Yeah, it feels really humbling. You kind of feel like you've got that sort of legacy stretching back all those years. The people that I work with now at Highland Park have 30 year services. They actually knew these guys, you know. So it's you can tangibly feel the past, and when you walk through the warehouses and you see the dates on the casks, it really brings it home to you. Yeah, those guys laid that spirit down all those years ago, and I'm just the custodian for the next little while until somebody else takes it over from me.
What did you think when they asked you to come up to Orkney and take over?
Well, I thought, yeah, great. I'm splattered. It suited me perfectly from where I was at the time. I was looking for something different, something radically different from what I'd been doing before. I didn't know the Orkney Islands. I'd never visited before. So when Edrington sort of propositioned me for the job and said, you know, what do you think? They flew me up on a really wild November day. The wind was blowing. We could hardly stand up straight when we got out of the car. I was sort of hooked from that moment. And when you walk in through the gates at Highland Park and you see that wonderful listed building, you think, yeah, this is a super place to be. So, yeah, I was delighted, and it's really worked out well for me.
And when you look at what would be the cornerstones in other buildings, but these are actually about 40 feet up of the various milestones in distillery construction, and the latest one is 1962. What does that make you think?
Maybe we're due for a bit of a revamp soon. they do like their traditions. They like to replicate the past as best they can. We're open to new ideas. We're open to new concepts. But there's always the key question is, if we change something, will it affect the quality? Will it affect the consumer's enjoyment of the brand? So, yeah, a lot of maintenance and replacement of what's been there in the past. There is some new buildings. I don't know if you saw that in your tour today, but these are more functional types of constructions to comply with modern building codes and standards. Sometimes it's not for the best, I'm afraid, but that's the rules.
That's the way it sort of has to be, but most of the distillery is essentially the same what it was 50 years ago.
Absolutely, yeah. The main courtyard where you had your tour today is pretty much anyone walking in, yeah, as you say, from the war years would recognise it as being the same Highland Park. And it's amazing. If you take those colour photographs you took today in black and white them and compare them with some of the shots from the past, you won't notice too much of a difference.
How has the spirit changed, though? Because I know you've had a chance to go back and taste some of the older spirits that have been produced here.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. It's probably someone better addressed to someone with a better nose than me or better palate than me. I suppose the purists would ask about the varieties of barley that we use. These are always changing in the Scotch whisky industry, and there's certainly a school of thought that says there's some linkage to that. Water supply has always been the same as far as I know. The malt mashing bill has changed over the years. essentially, it's still that 20% Highland Park malt, peated malt, 80% non-peated. But we used to mash much bigger quantities per mash. Now we mash only 6.5 tons. Stills have been changed, replaced with newer parts. Essentially, the process has been automated, so the stillman has been reduced, I guess, to a role of a watcher, and the computer now does most of the work for him. So we're trying to take that, and that's, I suppose, in a way, a lot of distillers have done that, to try and take that variability out of it. Because if the stillman goes off for a cup of tea or a fag, he misses the cut point, you know, you get a different batch of spirit. Nowadays, that's all been modernised. So, differences, I'm sure it is different, but I suppose it's just evolving with the modernisation of the plant.
How did you get your start in this business? Because I know you started, you came here from North British Grain Distillery up in Edinburgh, and how did you get your start?
Well, a long time ago. I was graduating from university, a chemical engineer, and I was looking for a job. And Bell's Scotch Whisky, they're now part of, they're a brand that's owned by Diageo nowadays, but they were an independent company at the time. And they asked me to come on board as a management trainee. It was fantastic, yeah, why not? Lovely place called Pitlochry, which is in rural Perthshire. So I started on the Monday, turned up with my suit and tie on and everything like that. And the manager sat me down, gave me a cup of tea, 9:30 in the morning, said, Graham, I remember an interview, you said you were a golfer, keen golfer. I said, yeah, that's right. He said, you wouldn't by any chance have brought your clubs up with you. I said, yeah, as a matter of fact, they're back at my digs. He said, well, that's fantastic. You're playing golf for the company, representing them in a match against Muir of Ord Distillery tomorrow. So my second day on the job, I was away golfing for the company. And I thought, this is not a bad industry to work in. And I've been there ever since. Probably playing golf and not a lot of work.
But it is really a lot of work to run a distillery like this these days, because you're responsible for not only the actual distilling operation, but the entire visitors operation, and really sort of overseeing the entire plant as well in a facility, even though it's as far north as Orkney, really does attract a lot of people up here.
Yeah, I mean, Patricia Retson and the team at the Brands Centre see a lot of people, a lot of tours, both people walking in off the street and visitor tours, and it's a fantastically busy operation for us. The distillery job has changed over the years. The compliance with the legislation, both on the environmental and health and safety side, is now a huge part of our business. The making sure that we meet those compliance targets and we keep the authorities on side and keep them informed about changes that we're making is a big part of my job as well. Efficiencies. We're all trying to be greener and more efficient and extract the maximum yield out of every kilogram of grain that we bring to Orkney. Every kilogram of break grain has to be brought across on the ferry crossing. So any waste or spoilage there is a double jeopardy. It costs us all that money to get it here, and we're not using it effectively when we get it here. So those are key focuses for the business. And I have a good team, a good strong team, experienced team. And I'm really lucky to inherit those guys from my predecessor, Russell, because they're a real bonus to have, and a real fillip to meet, to know that when I'm out here having dinner with you guys, there's somebody back at base who's really competent to look after the place for me.
What's the biggest difference between running a malt distillery and running a single grain distillery like you ran at North British?
It's just the scale of operation. Highland Park's due to make 2 million litres of alcohol this year. North British, when I left, was making 65 million litres. Nearly 130 employees, Highland Park has 25. And the vast concentration of resources, millions of pounds of maintenance, revenue, capital expenditure for a grain distillery, Highland Park's considerably smaller. And I think, you know, over above all those numbers, the thing I've taken on board in this short time I've been here is also quality. We're making less volume, but we're concentrating much more on those parameters which we believe the consumer values 12, 15, 18 years down the road. My ex-colleagues at North British will hate me for inferring that they didn't believe in quality as well, but there, I guess, the ethos was very much about unit cost of operation there. Whereas we're thinking a bit more about the quality of what we produce.
And I would venture to say that most whiskey connoisseurs may have heard of North British, but they certainly know about Highland Park. But they know only maybe a little bit about North British other than, well, it makes grain whiskey for all those blends. But that grain whiskey really is a really important component, isn't it?
It's a mainstay of the Famous Grouse, which is probably is still the biggest volume seller for the Edrington Group. And I think I've heard figures that the North British component of a bottle of Famous Grouse was about 40%. So it's by far the biggest contributor to Famous Grouse. And yes, the reciprocal deals that we can then do on the back of North British helps the Edrington Group secure grain whiskies from other companies as well, which go to make up all the rest of our blends. So yeah, absolutely a key component for the Edrington Group. And also they're half owned by Diageo, and I know Diageo value their spirit as well.
And that spirit also actually tastes pretty well on its own when it's aged properly and matured properly,
yeah,
too.
I've got a bottle of 1980 North British in my cabinet at home, and it's a very sweet tasting dram. Bit of water in it because it's a high strength bottling, but I used to quite like that as well. Highland Park was always my favorite though.
But it's okay to say that, but I've always argued that single grains are really good in the summertime when it's a nice hot day outside. Yep. And there is something to be said about drinking a single grain too.
Well, I mean, if you look historically at whiskey, you know, way back to the time it was all sort of kicking off as a blend in Scotland, grains were the thing that most Scottish people drank. You know, the quality was a bit of a problem, and it was really the advent of Distillers Company way back in those days to get the quality better that really, I suppose, launched this whole thing that we now call the Scotch whisky industry. And grains were the mainstay of it back in those days.
I know you don't have as much to do with the new releases that come out from Highland Park. You have some input into them, but it's mostly Max McFarlane and the whisky making group down in Glasgow that do this. But what do you think when you see the whiskies that you're helping to make now, when you travel and you see those in the duty-free shops and in the shops around the world, where you didn't see the North British product specifically?
No, I mean, it was one of the things I used to be most difficult when you met somebody and said, I work for North British. What's that? What do you make? And then you had our whiskies and the Rames Grouse Bells with Johnny Walker. Now you say, I work at Highland Park. People know exactly what it is that you make. And many, many people around the world have heard of it and understand it. So you see it on the shelves there and you say, yeah, I can identify with that. That's the place where I work. And people who came before me made that stuff. And it's, it gives you an immense feeling of pride and belonging.
And 15 to 18 years from now, or a little bit shorter or a little bit longer, the stuff you're making today will be out there.
Yeah, that will be a really proud moment. Something to look forward to. Hopefully I live to see it. Absolutely, it'd be nice.
Now, as we said, Graham's only been on Orkney for a year or so. So to put the Orkney experience in perspective, let's hear from Davy Reed. Davy's a legend on Orkney and retired from Highland Park a few years ago. He joined us for dinner at Helgi's in Kirkwall on our final night in Orkney and shared some of his memories with us.
Well, it was good, yeah. In fact, I'll be quite honest, if I could turn the clock back, I would do it all over again. Because the distilling industry was just a job that I liked. And yes, I mean, it was good. There's a lot of humour and a lot of, how can I put it, things that happened, you know. Like one guy at one of the other distilleries, I mean, they would fill twice a week. And if they were busy, and maybe, filling 80 casks. And there was only two filling heads. And there was 40 casks each. And every time he filled a cask, the thing was, they had to fill it right to the bung. And every time he filled his cask, he would go down. That's far too full. Now he would do that with 40 casks. Between 10 o'clock and 12 o'clock, he would still walk out of that door, out of the filling store door like a guardsman, as straight as a poker. Go in at 10 to 12 or 5 to 12 and get a glass of Cleric before his lunch, jump in the car and home he went.
And that was back in the days when dramming was accepted, right?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Yes, that's right.
How did that work?
How do you mean?
Well, how did you guys wind up earning drams? What's the worst thing you ever had to do that got you a dram?
Throw a mash. And it was in the, well, the, when I first started working at the distillery, you went into the mash tun, stripped to the waist with an aluminium shuffle, and you threw the draft out through a small opening into an elevator. And of course, the mash tun was hot, the draft was hot. You come out of there sweating like a pig. And, you know, you would go to the cupboard, because the brewer would always leave a dram for you. Get your dram, scop it down, away you went again. Start all over again.
And that was the Cleric or the New Make Spirit. That wasn't the old stuff, right?
No, no, it was a Cleric we got, yeah. Yeah.
But, how'd you wind up working in the distilleries?
Well, that was... when I first came to Orton in 73... that was my first introduction to the whiskey distilleries, because I started taking malt from St. Margaret's Hope to Scarpa, and that was my first introduction to the whiskey industry. I did that for about 18 months, and then moved on for a short spell, another 18 months, and drove buses, and I got paid off from there, and I was walking in the streets of Kirkwall one day, and I met the distillery manager of Iscaba, and we stood and spoke for a minute, and he asked me what I was doing. I said, I'm doing nothing. So I told him the story anyway, and he says, well, he says, come out by, he says, and we'll, you know, we'll have a talk. And that was it. Bang, I was in to the distillery, and I never looked back.
And you did a little bit of everything throughout your entire career between Scapa and Highland Park, right?
Well, no, I have never worked stills. I started in the warehouse of Scapa. I did about maybe, 19 years in the machine at Scapa, which I loved. And when we moved up to Highland Park in 1998, I went into the warehouse. But I mean, the mashing is a very interesting job, because that is where the whole process starts. And if you get that wrong, there's a lot of whiskey, lost. The same with the warehousing, it was a funny thing, because, how can I put it? Every cask was different. And I'll give you an instance of that, because there was some time ago, we were asked to go and draw samples for, I think it was over 400 samples. I think it was for the 30-year-old at Highland Park. And two casks, two big butts, 500 litres each, filled the same day, one number of difference, when the days when all the casks were stenciled and numbered, and one number of difference. We drew a sample from one, and it was as clear, it was like cider, it's the same colour as cider. Pulled a sample from another one, and it was the loveliest cherry whiskey I ever did see. Now, how does that happen? It's the, to me, my own opinion is, it's the casks that make the whiskey. You know?
But as you pointed out, it's also the mash and the mashing process and the mashman that starts that whole process off. So who's more important in the process here? Is it the mashman that makes the mash? Is it the stillman that runs the stills? The cooper that makes the barrels? Or the blender who winds up putting it all together? Who do you think is more critical to the success in making a good whiskey?
I would say it's teamwork. Everybody, right from the warehouseman to the blender, as you say, you know, everybody has got, and their how can I put it? they put in their sixpence worth. I mean, it's really teamwork, I would say.
When you sit down and drink a dram of Highland Park, or even go back to the older days at Scapa, what do you think about when you drink that dram that you helped make so many years ago?
It gives me a sense of satisfaction to know that, you know, I've maybe helped to make that dram, you know. I mean, at the moment, Scapa's selling 16-year-old. Well, I probably had a hand in some of that, I don't know, probably, you know. Maybe some of the Highland Park 12-year-old now, you know, I've probably warehoused some of that, you know, when I first started in 98. You know, I don't know. No, I mean, to me, the whisky industry is very interesting. And for any young chap that's looking for a steady, reliable job and an interesting job, I know, I mean, we'll go up there, and if you're in the warehouse, you're pushing cask. That is your main job. But there's 1,001 things that happen in between that. You know, you've got to go and repair the casks. Now, repairing can be interesting because there's little things, what they call worms, believe it or not, that actually eat into the casks. Now, if that wormhole is not fixed, that over the years, it'll take a few years, but it will empty the cask. I've seen it happen.
I'm told that there's a ghost at Highland Park. You ever see it?
Well, yes, I've heard about it. Yes, but I've never seen the guy. Or he or she, let's put it that way. Yeah.
That's retired Highland Park warehouseman Davey Reed. I want to thank everyone at Highland Park for inviting me to visit Orkney this week, and I know I'll be going back there again one day soon. That's this week's Whiskey Cast In Depth, brought to you by Woodford Reserve. Discover Woodford Reserve Double Oaked, uniquely matured in two separate new white oak barrels, the second deeply toasted and lightly charred for a more complex dimensional flavor. Find out more at woodfordreserve.com. Be double sure, drink responsibly. Woodford Reserve Double Oaked Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey, 45.2% alcohol by volume, Woodford Reserve Distillery, Versailles, Kentucky. I tasted a bunch of Highland Parks this week, as you might expect, including a 1968 cask in the warehouse. But let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with one of the rarer Highland Parks. The Highland Park cask strength is only available in Sweden and at the distillery, and cask strength distillery bottlings of Highland Park have always been hard to find. This one is bottled at 56% ABV. The nose is fruity and vibrant with notes of banana, orange peel, vanilla, and coconut. The taste is chewy and fruity at first with a strong pepperiness that builds up quickly but doesn't overpower the notes of orange peel, allspice, and licorice. The finish is long and fruity with a lingering pepperiness. I really wish they'd make this available worldwide, but it's not likely to happen. I'm scoring the Highland Park cask strength a 93. I did get to taste one other cask strength Highland Park while I was in Kirkwall, thanks to Malcolm at the Linfield Inn, who had a bottle of Highland Park 1958 at the bar. It was bottled in 1998 after 40 years in cask at 44% ABV. The nose is full of honey, caramel candy, toffee, and soft spices, very mild and aromatic. The taste is a good balance of spice and sweetness with black pepper and ginger, balanced by a healthy note of my favorite Scottish delicacy, sticky toffee pudding, for a good chewy mouthfeel. The finish is lingering and spicy with honey and caramel sweetness. It's an amazing whiskey. I'm scoring the Highland Park 1958 a 96. Now, Malcolm easily has more than 200 different whiskeys at his bar, including the Glenfarclas 105 40-year-old. This was a very rare limited release to mark the 40th anniversary of the original Glenfarclas 105 bottling way back in 1968. It's a whopper at 60% ABV, ruby red in color with a nose full of figs, toffee, Christmas cake, and honey. The taste is fruity and intensely spicy with a good burn, dried fruits and classic sherry cask toffee notes, cinnamon, and ginger. The finish is long with cinnamon and pepper spices that fade slowly, and adding some water brings out orange and mango notes as well. I'm scoring the Glenfarclas 105 40-year-old a 95. I've added these tasting notes to the WhiskeyCast website, where you'll find more than 950 tasting notes for whiskeys from around the world. That's also where you'll find WhiskeyCast HD and WhiskeyCast Virtual Tastings episodes, the latest whiskey news, your voice, and a searchable archive of past episodes. The address is WhiskeyCast.com, and my email address for your questions and suggestions is comments@WhiskeyCast.com. I'd love to hear from you.
WhiskeyCast. Proudly brought to you by Redbreast. The definitive single pot still Irish whiskey. Join the stillhouse at singlepotstill.com and receive an exclusive whiskey tasting journal.
Whiskey Cast is a production of Cask Strength Media, copyright 2013, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.